Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's always great when we can get together with friends on the podcast. Ray Koob here with my partner in crime,
Marcus Goldman. Hello.
And we are joined in the, we have the quad working. If we were in the red zone on NFL Red Zone, we'd be in the quad right now. Four boxes working. Joining us on the podcast right now, two of our original guests from the early days of the podcast, together here, and of course, they've been hanging out and working together all through all this time since the last time we all got together on the Imbalanced History of Rock and Roll. David Wasikny, Kenny Aronson, welcome back, guys.
Hello. Hey. Good to see you guys, man.
Hey, man. Great to see you guys on this monumentous day.
It is.
We're all wearing our Phillies caps, excited about
what's going on.
You know, so that's crazy, got my heart skipping and popping a few beats already in the morning. So I'm excited.
Is that good or bad for a session guy, though?
That's okay. You know,
does it add a little extra slink to it?
Well, if you can't get excited about what you're doing, you shouldn't go. You know what I mean? I said, like, I get pretty pumped up about working, especially if I get to work with Kenny. I'm always like, oh, that's going to be, it's going to be good. And hey, listen, and congratulations on your podcast. It's wonderful, and you guys are still rolling and doing great. And
it's a miracle.
It's good to see you guys. Really, you know, it is. You know, in today's world, you know, you never know where something starts, and then you find out, hey, what happened to that? You know, and you guys are rolling along and doing great work, and we appreciate it.
And we appreciate our sponsors, Dave, who really helped us. The folks at Boldfoot Socks, boldfoot.com. And Crooked Eye Brewery in the heart of Hapro since 2014. So them and all the other sponsors here really helped us to continue to grow. And we've gotten to talk to so many people since the last time we all got together here.
Man, you had Jim McCarty on your show before even Kenny.
He was our first guest, right, Marcus?
Wow. And it just totally worked out because the Yardbirds were playing up in, I think, Phoenixville at about that time. And we wanted to do the Yardbirds episode because of the importance of the Yardbirds on those days
of
rock and roll.
Was I playing with them at that point?
Yes, you were.
It was right before you came in to visit and pre-pandemic shutdown.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And by the way, on the Kenny Aronson episode, Kenny tells us the story about his audition with the Rolling Stones, and you have to go back and check that episode out.
Oh, that's the best. I actually get him to tell that story multiple times. It's like it never gets old.
And then the
fact that he could play with Charlie Watts, you know.
Well, we have so much stuff to talk about, and other things that have been going on over the last couple of years, where you've been, Dave, and where you've been, Kenny.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about most recently and offer a big over the internet hug to Kenny, especially on the loss of your dear friend, Robert Gordon.
He meant
the world to me as a young guy absorbing that sound.
Wow.
And I know you were at his service, and I just wanted to offer condolences to you, Ken.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's a sad thing. Kenny and I played with him around Christmas time, and he was Robert, you know? I mean, never a dull moment. And I got some video of us backstage, which, you know, I mean, the guy was kind of like, you know, a warrior to the very end. I couldn't have imagined what that hospital room must have been like.
Oh, my.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's a rockabilly boogie. Rockabilly boogie. Rockabilly boogie.
The one thing that was undeniable about Robert, and Kenny could tell you, is that, you know, he knew that music and he could sing, and he was the real deal. He was the real deal, that cat.
Well, when I heard him when I was in my teens, I went, okay, I recognize this sound, but who's this guy?
Mm.
And part of it was when he did Fire.
You had a hold on me right from
stays cool. Romeo and Juliet, Samson and Delilah. Baby, you can bet the love they didn't deny. Well, now your words say split, but your words they lie. 'Cause when we
and that brought him a whole wave of popularity and brought the music back to a lot of people who were like my age, you know, or younger, like Marcus. That's where, you know, that whole wave is what got a lot of us into the
music. Did either of you guys have a favorite Robert Gordon song out of all of them? I know you
being closer to them, but
was there one that stood out or hit you in the feels in a different way than any of the others?
I loved when he sang The Fool.
Yeah.
You know, that song?
Eliezer.
He needs a soul. He wonders why he let her go. She's found a new love, but he's a lucky guy. So drink to a fool, 'cause I'm
I loved all his renditions of the old classic country and rockabilly things that he did. The weird thing with Robert, you know, it's like oil and water with him. Because when I started...
Now it's coming out.
Well, no, I mean, when I started with Robert, I took over from Rob Stoner and Tony Garnier. Stoner's a great bass player, but he played electric bass. And Tony played electric and upright. But his real thing was upright. Mm. And I remember when I'd go see him down at the Lone Star Cafe.
What a place
that
was.
And Tony and Robert used to do this Johnny Cash song called There You Go.
Well, here I am, and there you go, you're gone again. I know you're gonna be the way you've always been. Breaking hearts and telling lies is all you know. Another guy gives you the eye. There you go, there you go, you're gone again. I should have known that we'd wait. There you go, you're by his side. You're gonna break another heart, you're gonna tell another lie.
And on that song, Tony would slap the bass. And so I used to always be fascinated by that because I'm not an upright player. So I used to try to adapt that to electric bass. And then I started to play with Robert because I kind of took over. The oldest other guys kind of went on and did other stuff. So I started to do that, and I would try to adapt that style when we would do that song. You know, there was a bunch of years in the 80s when I started, when I was playing with Robert, and I played a Lone Star with him, and occasionally I'd go out of town. When I played with Robert, he had either Shannon Ford on drums and Bobby Chouinard. Or Tommy Price or Anton Figg.
Mm.
And, no slouches there. No slouches there, boys.
All of them... Great. All of them approaching it their own particular way. Always good, no matter who it was. But it would always be a little different, you know.
Yeah.
But for me, to have the honor and the chance to play with Chris Spedding was really cool because I loved Chris's guitar playing. Now, I never got a chance to play with Danny Gatton or these other cats that Robert used, but...
Yeah. What about Link? I don't even know. Did you play with Link?
I didn't. No, that was way before my time. Right. So, but playing with Spedding was really... I used to have a really great... I loved listening to Chris. I just always thought he was a very interesting and a very economical guitar player. He only played... what counted and no more, you know,
wow.
which is, you know, cool. Robert, you know, I love the guy. By the end of the night, something would happen where he was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the end of the night, there'd be something going on and somebody would get the wrath. You know,
you like drama.
A lot of drama. And, you know, one time we were backstage at a show somewhere, probably at the Lone Star. And this is when I was playing with Brian Setzer at this period. So it was like mid-80s. And I used to wear, you know, engineer's boots. And Robert chewed me a new asshole.
Because I'm wearing
engineer boots and I don't ride a motorcycle.
No.
So he gave me a hard time over that. You know, it was always something.
Something.
Right.
You know, but the thing is, every time I'd play with Robert, some crap would go down. I'd go home complaining to my girlfriend. That's it. I've had it with him. I've never played with him again. Well, I can't take it. He's driving me crazy.
I've heard that from him too.
And then as soon as he would call me again and ask, hey, man, you available to do a gig? I'd go back because I loved his music and I loved his voice.
The way I walk is just the way I walk. The way I talk is just the way I talk. The way I smile is just the way I smile. Touch me, baby, and I go home wild. The way I love is just the way I love. Come on and be my little turtle dove. Touch me, baby, it feels so good. I feel as though I wanna, then I don't know if I should. Do you,
and it was like I was addicted to it. I needed to hear his voice booming out of these monitors. His monitors would be surrounded by monitors and he'd have them cranked. So he could project that low end of his voice.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, to me, that was magic. You know?
And Kenny mentioned those monitors because Kenny knew his setup so well that, you know, the few times that I played with Kenny and Robert, I noticed Kenny would walk up stage and if he saw the setup before Robert got there, he would go, uh-oh, we're going to have some trouble. Yeah. He would say that. I'm going, what do you mean? And he said, oh, the monitor over to the right isn't right. He had this way of surrounding himself.
I would try to fend off issues. Robert was never easy because he really knew what he wanted. He knew what kind of tone, what kind of level. He may not be able to talk to an engineer on a musical or, you know, an engineer frequency sort of aspect, you know, technical stuff.
Right.
Well, he knew what he wanted. And the least that I can do is I can tell the sound guy, look, the way you have your monitors placed, wrong. You need to bring them in.
Yeah.
You need to surround his microphone with him because he wants it loud and he needs to be enveloped in it, you know,
because
that's what he needed.
I hear the passion in you, Ken, about this whole thing. Yeah. And it's really, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it's interesting to hear Kenny talk about it because, you know, from being around Kenny and knowing like some of the, you know, Robert wasn't, you love a guy and sometimes you could actually hate the guy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the guy was tough.
But he really knew what he wanted.
Oh, man. I mean, a guy sang with the Jordanaires. You know? See, the Jordanaires sang with
him. The thing is, the thing with Robert that I have to say, Robert in general kind of let me be because he knew I always played the show just like his two favorite bassists, which was Rob Stoner and Tony Garnier. And I would play it right down the middle of what those two guys would do. And I never deviated, never got fancy with it. I was always just there for him, exactly what he wanted, no more and no less. So most of the time, He didn't really. I mean, he would get on my case about something else, but generally it wasn't anything to do with the music.
Good.
But he was brutal on guitar playing.
Is it safe to say he was a ball buster?
That's being polite. He was a mother. You know what do you mean? He was rough. I mean, I've seen him do a few things that I went. The last show we did, Kenny and I, John Sebastian sat in with us, and which was amazing. We're at soundcheck playing with John Sebastian. We're looking at each other going like, do you believe we're doing this, right?
Pinch me.
He said to me at dinner, he goes, how do you guys do it? Because Robert was looking at our poor partner over there, Q, over on the other side going,
Quentin, man.
Shut the fuck up. Excuse me, I know you bleep that out, but he would say things like
on this podcast,
you know, I mean, he would be rough, and you know, and Quentin would try to appease him and do whatever. You just had to. Kenny saved me a lot of anguish because he would say, just do this, play like that, do that, because if you don't,
I did the gig with him for over a period of time, so I really knew. You know, he was very sensitive about tempos.
Yeah,
he was very sensitive with the drummer about where the tempo was, but he was really brutal with guitar players because if you're not Chris Spedding or you're not Danny Gatton or you're not Lance Quinn,
and who is?
You know, if you're not one of the four guys that he loved, that everything was based off of. Man, you're in for a ride, and he was brutal that day.
He was never polite.
With Quentin, he was really rough on Quentin.
Yeah, and God bless him.
I felt bad for Quentin.
Yeah, we
because somebody else would have told him to fuck off and walk off.
May he rest in peace.
Yes,
Robert Gordon, ladies and gentlemen.
Listen, we loved him. We played with him. Kenny was going to go out and do these shows with him. He tested your fiber, your sense of. Every sensibility when it came to, I love this music. I know I'm going to feel good when I'm playing this music, but there's going to be some bumps in the road. You know, I mean, there's a famous, real quickly, we're playing at the, it's not there anymore. Their place, it was a famous place in Philadelphia. And we were playing Fire. And we start playing the intro. And Rob Hyman and all these people, they're in the audience. We're playing. We start playing. And he stops the show and he goes, he looks at Kenny, he goes, hey, you're in the wrong key. This is in the front of the other people.
Wow.
And when we look at each other, I'm going, he doesn't sound like he's in the wrong key to me. No. And then we start playing again, boom. And then Kenny looks at him and goes, yeah, now you got it. I mean, Robert looks at him and goes, now you got it. It was like,
no, but he didn't do anything. Robert was in the wrong key and tried to blame it on me so he didn't look bad. And I said to him, no, Robert, you're in the wrong key. There's only one place to play it. This is it. You know, I mean, it was just, but that's what he would do. If he screwed up, he would try to make somebody else look bad. And then you would just call him on it, and it'd be like, oh, you know, yuck, you know.
Yeah. I spent a little time with him, enough time to see him in action, but hey, God bless him. You know, he's no longer suffering anymore. Right. He's playing with some of his favorite artists up in the sky.
Hey, I'm gonna show you guys something. Hold on a second.
All right.
You're right back.
I know what's coming.
Uh-oh.
This is legendary. What's coming? If I think he's doing what I think he's doing, this is incredible. Here we go. Oh my God, that bass, is that the K?
That's it.
Oh my God! So that was Robert's bass. Well, you want to tell a story, Kenny?
Please tell that story.
I was up at Robert's house one night. This is many, many years ago. Like probably right before I stopped playing with him, and I didn't really hang out with Robert socially. But for some reason, I was up in his area and I was up in his house for a little while, and I saw that bass hanging on his wall, and I said, "Hey, Robert, you know, if you ever feel like selling that bass, let me know. I'd love to buy that if you want to sell it sometime." And then one day I get a phone call. This is when I was living in Manhattan. He goes, "Hey, man, you want to buy that bass?" I said, "Yeah, I'll buy the bass." He goes, "You want to give me $250 for it?" And as soon as I heard $250, I knew what he needed the money for. You know, anyway, I go down to the cash machine. And I get the money, and he comes over, and I bought the bass from him. And then after that, I never heard from him again. I mean, he never hired me for anything. I never seen him. I didn't talk to him.
For years.
For 20 years. And then one day, I was in the city, and I was hanging out with my guitar player friend, John Paris. We were in B.B. King's, and we went to see Robert perform. And John, my buddy John Paris, says to me, he goes, hey, let's go back and say hello to Robert. And I was like, I don't know if I want to go back there. Because, you know, I just, you know, it's like I just had a feeling, oh, God, if I go back there, there's going to be something. Anyway, we go back, say hello to Robert. Robert says to me, hey, Kenny, why don't you give me your phone number? I want to make sure I got your phone number. So I said, all right, here's my phone number. Same number I've had for years.
Oh, Jesus.
And then all of a sudden, he started to call me wanting the bass back. Because he claims that I said to him I would sell it back to him at the same price. Now, maybe I did. You know, I'm talking, okay, if you want it back in a year, couple of
right.
years
yeah.
I didn't hear from the guy for over 20 years, and all of a sudden
what a character he was.
Mean man by the value of that bass.
My ex-wife and I had a country house in New York State, so all my stuff was stashed up in the house. That's where I kept all my instruments, because our apartment in the city mm-hmm. was really tiny. So anyway, I didn't have the bass handy anyway. It was just stashed away with all my other stuff. Make a long story short, one day I'm walking around the music stores in New York, and I go into Rudy's Music, and there's the same bass that I've got from Robert. And they're wow. asking like serious money, and I'm like
thousands and
thousands of dollars for yeah. it. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I think it was valued at like $9,000 or something.
Yeah, it was like $4,000 or $5,000 people were asking for. You know, okay. that's but it's really a beautiful, cool bass style wise, but it's really a piece of junk. Probably cost $65, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, but anyway,
you never know where the value's coming from. That's
you know, but you know it. But it was only made for a couple of years, so they're relatively rare. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Quentin Aaronson, ladies and gentlemen,
Quentin tells the joke he told me yesterday, and I'm told you, Kenny. His last dying words were, call Kenny, I want my bass back.
God.
Well, guys, we properly eulogized the late, great Robert Gordon yes. here on the podcast, I believe. But
Black Slacks.
So much. Oh, I love that.
Tough darts.
So much happened after the two of you came in to visit with us in a studio visit at the beginning of the podcast. Then pandemic hit. And Dave, you were supposed to be going on tour with the Hooters for the 40th, and then it yeah. became delayed and delayed twice, 40, right? So yeah. It's the 42nd now,
yeah.
and you guys got to go this year. And you, Kenny, you were talking about getting on the road. I don't know how many times you've gone on and off the road with McCarty and the Yardbirds and the rest of that gang.
Since I've seen you with the pandemic, everything, what I did was I spent 2 years in my basement here on my studio recording music with my Hawaiian steel guitar.
Woo.
That's
I want to hear some of that sound.
I'll send you some.
Good. Please.
Really great.
But also during the pandemic, you guys dug into playing. You mentioned being in the basement. I noticed that on the Lest We Forget tracks that you sent me, Dave, these songs are part of a kind of an alternate to the In the Pocket idea, where you're looking at songs that are memorable and moments that are memorable. In this case, both of them are songs the Stones did as a tribute to Charlie Watts.
Yeah, that was a real honor. I mean, this guy Tom Emmy, who produces these tracks to honor fallen, not only just artists, people like Charlie, he also honors engineers and producers, you know, the Al Schmidt and people like that. I mean, he honors behind the scenes guys, but we were fortunate. Like Tom called me up and asked me, hey, I'm thinking about doing a tribute to Charlie Watts. And even before he got the words out, I was like, I'm in. I live in a park. I was playing with Kenny that night, and I said, I got the guy that the bass player for this, and I sent in, I said, Kenny Aaronson. He goes, well, do you think you'd do it? I said, I'm pretty sure, but I mentioned it to Kenny. Kenny goes, I leaned over when we were playing 118 North. I said, hey, I was asked to do this tribute for Charlie Watts. Before I had words out, he goes, yeah, I'll do it. So it was pretty cool, but what made it really special for us is that Waddy Wattel and Chuck Lavelle and Kevin Hansen, who was a great guitar player from the area, mm-hmm. Puffamoose and the Fractals, he played guitar. But it was and Willie Nile, our friend Willie, sang.
Mm-hmm. Sounded great.
It was really cool. You know, we got to talk about Charlie, what made him special to us. And I mean, Kenny had the connection of playing with them on stage, and I saw the Stones so many times, and that period of the Rolling Stones is still my favorite. I mean, as much as I like what they do, they can't do many wrong with me. When Bill Wyman and Charlie played together, it was something just magical. Mike Edison, my book, wrote a book called Sympathy for the Drummer, and it's a terrific book, and it described Charlie so well on how Charlie plays, and he has this, you know, great style. You know, you don't have to play real hard. He plays just a great feel. I know Kenny loved drummers like that because he just sent me this great video of Earl Palmer, the great recorded drummer that played Fats Domino and all that stuff. And, you know, he said, you know, what? Check this guy. This is the guy that does it, you know. Charlie was one of those guys that was just played so much, like, it was just something special. So to be involved with this tribute, and people can get it at Lest We Forget. There's a website. I know the website's not off the top of my head, but, you know, it's just a fun project to be involved with. And we love Charlie, right, Kenny?
And I'm a big Bill Wyman fan, so I got a chance to use my 1965 Framis bass, and I was able to, you know, play Bill Wyman bass lines that I love. Yeah. So I was.
And Bill just turned 86. Bill, can you believe that?
Unbelievable, wow. Man.
Is he married to somebody that's like 30 years old or 25 years
that's
old?
That's probably all she is by now.
Bless him. God bless the man.
Yeah, God bless him. The man.
Old Bill.
And Bill looks great. I mean, you know, and I don't know if you know this, Ray, but Kenny also played with Mick Taylor. He was in Mick Taylor's band.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I toured the United States and Japan and Australia with Mick around 1990. Yeah. And we also had Max Middleton from the Jeff Beck
group on
piano. It was great. Yeah.
So anytime you get near Kenny, you're playing, you just kind of go, just touch his arm a little bit. Because he's always been like, I mean, that and Dave Edmonds, you know, we did a track together for my project In the Pocket with Greg Sober. We were honoring, you know, because I thought about George Thorogood, and we did Move It On Over, and Kenny played this bass line that was like off the hook, kind of more of a Hank Williams meets George Thorogood version. And Kenny played this bass line. That's probably in his DNA anyway.
Well, I was trying to channel Joey Spampinato from RBQ.
Yeah.
So it was somewhere between, you know, it was that kind of thing where it's sort of straight, but there's a shuffle and a swing to it at the same time. Yeah. Old school. Yeah. What I was trying to hit me to with that Earl Palmer video.
Yeah. You
know, like,
yeah.
So
yeah. I mean, we're still I don't know. I kid people, you know, I teach at this school and all this, they're young people at the school, and you know, about geezer rock, you know, like I'm 66 and I'm rocking it. But you know, what I love is that, you know, I still feel like every day I want to learn something new, and I want to kind of get better at what I do, because it's like, I don't feel the kind of pressures I used to feel when I was younger. Like, you know, getting a house and doing this and that thing. Now it's just about, like, right. How do I enhance my life and how do I enhance my craft? How do I get better at what I'm doing when I'm making music? You know, I mean, that's, you know, and I got to tell you, you know, it was a blessing for guys. You know, Kenny thanks me sometimes for getting him involved with the guys we're playing with. But the fact is that him moving into this area was like, ooh. We got a guy that like has done some amazing things, and we're about to jump into this cool New Year's gig with Do you remember the band Bow Wow Wow?
Yes, of course.
Sure. Well, we're playing with Annabella on New Year's Eve, and we're backing her up, and we get it.
I saw her at Red Rocks in, like, 1983. They opened up for the English Beat. R.E.M. was on their first tour of the U.S., and she was my age. She was 17 years old. She was born in 66, a few months over from me. And we were all like, oh, my God, teen crush. Like, if there was a dude's version of Tiger Beat magazine, she would have been the one, you know?
Well, I was listening to the music last night, playing along with it. And, you know, the drums are just, like, off the hook. Really cool. So, I mean, I think we got a friend of ours that's going to join us to do these, and I hope that works out that we can do it. But so we'll have like a double drummer thing going on. It's going to be so cool.
Is it going to happen in Philly?
Well, we'd like it to happen. Right now, it's happening in Lititz.
It's in Lititz.
Yeah, we're playing in Lititz for New Year's Eve. And but hey, who knows? You know, it's kind of like we're going to try it out, see how it goes, and maybe there's some more things to come from it because. I dig her music, and I think it's perfect for the times right now.
You know, I was just going to say that I downloaded all the stuff that Quentin sent of the set list that she wants to do.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to this stuff, and I'm going,
this is cool.
Oh, man, the bass playing on this stuff is off the hook. The bass player that she had played like serious. I mean, it's this energetic, really fast, trebly. I mean, I'm going to have a blast with it, but I've got a lot of stuff to learn, and I got to start practicing it to get my picking up to speed for this stuff.
Hold on, Dave. Tell people where they can get more information on this New Year's Eve thing that you're talking about, because people may want to go, you know.
Yeah. It's. I just posted I think all of us are putting it up on our social media thing, where we can see where you get tickets, which is New Year's Eve, and the Martini Brothers are playing with us. And of course, here it is. But that you can see it says it's a 50, is it said 50/80s party? So it's going to be cool, man. You know, I mean,
flashback,
it's gonna
be on flashback on flashback.
Yeah. But we'll get the details out on
get it on Dave's on his social media. Get all the info on that New Year's Eve gig on the episode on our website, imbalancehistory.com. Time for a short break. Back with the boys after a word from our sponsors. It's fall, and I know, Marcus, that you've got a ton of anecdotal stories about your feet and riding and running and all that stuff that you do in the fall. And I know Boldfoot socks are part of your regimen, right?
Absolutely. They wick moisture off your feet and keep them dry. I do wear the Boldfoot socks when I bike, and never, ever have I had swampy feet. And I've ridden on almost 100-degree heat index day, and my feet weren't
this
swampy.
Summer especially,
so, yeah.
Whew.
I really like what they do. And another bonus is they're American made.
Boldfoot Socks is a company that Josh got into because he did a 100K thing. Who has time for that, man? He's amazing. So he goes and does this 100K in these Boldfoot socks, and the socks perform so well, he believes, and he's right, that these socks are really going to revolutionize footwear for people who work out and ride, especially someone like you who rides a lot on their bike.
And let's not forget, Josh did that like 100-mile run in the Nevada desert. That is gnarly and tough. And he donates portions of his sales to military charities, which is awesome.
So go check out their amazing variety of colors and styles. Great socks. And you can find them all at boldfoot.com. Thanks to them for their support of the podcast. As always,
Boldfoot socks, American grown, American sewn.
So much has been happening this year and changing at Crooked Eye Brewery, our sponsor for a long time now, Marcus. Since 2014, they've been pouring the cure for what ails you, but then they added craft cocktails, then they added ciders, and recently they opened the Crooked Eye Kitchen and Salty Vets Barbecue being served at the premises. You used to have to bring something with you, now just bring your appetite.
The long-term business plan of Crooked Eye has been very smart. Whatever they were going to do before the pandemic had to change drastically, and they've made the adjustments. And as we've slowly opened up, they've slowly continued to add and add and create more. And it's much to the delight of the people going in there all the time, because like you've said, every night's a party, a different kind of party over at Crooked Eye. It's
and
a random
sometimes
party.
What the music is, like the Blues Jam or the second Tuesday of the month with my vinyl night, which is anything you want it to be. The Crooked Eye Band and all the other performers who make it fun, Mafia, all performing. Check it all out. And the way to find out about who's playing when is on their Facebook. That's really the best way to keep up, but the website too, I guess.
So if you're looking for a place to go, make a plan, grab a friend, meet at Crooked Eye in the heart of Hatboro, serving you since 2014.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hanging with Dave and Kenny on the imbalanced history of rock and roll. Let's jump back into it.
On the cover of Young Americans, you did. Who played the saxophone on that?
Jay Davidson.
Yeah,
is.
Right.
Jay Davidson. I mean, and let me tell you.
Did a great
job. That guy, you know, I mean, there's no, you know, he played with Houston, Steve Winwood, Cinderella, you know, You Care, Shelter Me. I think he's the sax on the stuff that he did with Cinderella. A terrific player, and he played on that. Kenny played bass on that mm-hmm. track. We had a lot of fun doing that. You know, all that stuff we do like old school. We come and we cut it live, and we record it together at Phil's place at Studio 4. And that one came out beautifully. Richard Bush, I mean, just killed it. Cliff Hillis and Steve Butler and Kenny Aronson and Wally Smith.
Lays it down, hit the ground. Gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed her then and there. She took his ring, took his babies. You took him in it, took him nowhere. Heaven knows she'd have taken anything. She was a young American.
Young American, young American. She was a young.
That one I'm really thrilled about. Like anytime we get together to do that, it's really a gas for all of us, man, you know. So,
and the thing about that song is that it not only ties back to the Philly feel, but Bowie recorded it here
and
like
11th Street.
Sigma Sound right down there in Chinatown.
Yeah. Exactly why I did it. I mean, I wanted to do
so
it there.
So cool.
Because,
great idea.
Yeah, that was such an influential period of music for me at that time. I think 73, and I even knew a little bit of, you know, I met a couple guys. T.J. Tindall was a friend of mine, and so he was doing sessions there at Sigma, and he was like a young dude that was coming down from New Hope and working 9 to 5 playing all these cool Philly International songs, and David Bowie wanted to have that feel, and some of the guys that were cutting those tracks, they opted out, you know, and, you know, Bobby Eli played on it, Larry Washington played on it, and but they got that Philly sound going on that track, you know, so I just felt compelled to do it. You know, we got to do this.
One of my favorite things to play with these guys with in the pocket is when we do Mrs. Jones with Kent Cleaner.
Me and Mrs. Jones. We got a thing. Going on.
know it's wrong, but it's what she's drawn to just let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and you know she'll be there.
I love that song, and it's got such a great feel, and I love playing bass on that.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, it's so much great stuff from Philly soul thing, you know.
Yeah. There's some cool things. Like Philadelphia, I think right now is on the cusp of some really interesting, cool things coming down the pike, because, you know, Philly is probably, you know, years ago, a big jazz town, you know, and then Philly International became like Hit City. Mm-hmm. But there was a whole underground thing going on here with rock and roll, and even before the days of Gamble and Huff, there was music that was just trending all over the world. You know, when you think about Charlie Gracie, Bobby Rydell, and some of these people that came out here, that really paved the way.
I'm only looking. I don't want to fall, I'm only looking. I'm having a ball, just looking. Well, baby, that's all. I like to hug you. You're kissing this fine, but you're the my dear. Out of your mind, I'm just looking. Baby, that's all.
I mean, Eddie Cochran would come hang out here with Charlie, you know, this was a scene here, man, you know.
Yeah.
So I think there's some stories and some things are going to come out in the future that's going to expand on that a little bit more. And it's going to be very cool.
I would love to hear more about the Philly influence in those early days.
Yeah.
It's a great learning process, and it's exciting to hear because a lot of cool things have happened here. And currently, as you guys know, there's a solid group of young musicians that are moving rock and roll forward. You have bands like Soraya, Zuzu, and their band are great. You have so many other good bands in the area.
Yeah.
And a scene.
Marcus, have you seen Loka Khan?
I love Low Cut Connie.
I have
friends in Denver who every time they see him play in Colorado have been sending me pictures from him for years. They're like, this guy's amazing. This band is amazing.
Really?
And they aren't kidding.
Yeah, they're just down and dirty. Like, just the show was just so energetic and so great that I was blown away. I mean, I've been hearing about him for years, and then they invited me down to the World Cafe. I watched that show, and I was just knocked out by Adam and everybody in the band. You know, the bass player, Kenny, you'd love this guy. He remind me of T-Bone Walk.
I've seen them in New Jersey. I've done shows with them, like with John Eddie. We've been on the same bill. They are a great band.
They're an energetic band.
And I like the name of the band. I like the name.
Low-Cut Connie's great.
There's a lot of good things to come. We live in a music city, and I'm excited about the future here, man. Absolutely.
Excellent.
What's in the immediate future for you two guys? Kenny, you've been on the road with the Yardbirds.
The
Hooters
finally
got after this massive European tour to catch up with everything over there. What's coming up for you,
Ken? I did some Yardbirds dates in October. It was only a week and a half, unfortunately, and they were really makeup dates for things that got blown off because of the pandemic. But I have...
Oh,
a Yardbirds, new Yardbirds live CD called Mind the Gap.
Which
and I'm a co-producer of it.
Wow.
With
cool,
my buddy, Bruce Maycomba, who is a friend of Jim McCarty's, and we produce this together. And we don't have distribution for it yet, but we're working on it. It sounds great.
Wow.
And my bass is screaming on it.
Nice.
So I'm real happy.
Good.
Yeah. And then we're going to be doing more stuff next year. We're going to be doing the Flower Power Cruise. So next year is the 60th anniversary of the Yardbirds.
Wow.
And we're trying to pull something really special together.
Jimmy.
With a couple of special guests, possibly.
Don't jinx it.
But that's all I'll say.
And as far as
I'm just saying, the one guy's in Columbus a lot. If you go to the local,
right,
you can find him there.
Yeah. He goes to the flea market there.
Yeah, I heard that.
You guys know who Darryl Davis is?
No, I don't. Inform us, please.
You got to check him out. He's an activist. He's an activist. He's this great black dude who goes around and tries to convert like Ku Klux Klansmen.
Oh, I've heard of that dude. I've heard of that dude.
We're playing with him.
He is a world class R&B historian of piano.
Yes.
Ooh.
And when he plays during his part of his thing, is in one of the songs that we'll do with him. He'll give a lesson within the song demonstrating how this particular feel on piano came from what area that was pioneered by what player.
Oh, we need to have him on.
The New Orleans feel, the Chicago feel, the Memphis feel. Yeah. And he demonstrates all the subtleties on the piano of these feels and differences in the shuffle.
Yes.
And it's like I'm playing there with him and I'm getting this education. And I'm going, this guy is, these people that I walk away going, this is what enriches my life.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think we're playing with Darryl. I think it's believed December 10th. And I would make sure I get you the location because I'm not even sure about the location, but it's out near the Harrisburg area, I believe.
Okay.
And then of course we have the New Year's date with Annabella and QDK and Annabella that we're doing too. We'll get you the info on that.
As far as the Annabella thing, if you want to do a practice run, you should reach out to the Ardmore Music Hall and see if they could book you for a quick date on that.
That's a thought.
My son will be off from school that week, and
there you go.
We're gonna come and do a podcast there.
We took our son; he's 6 years old. We took him to Rammstein for his first concert.
You're kidding me, Rammstein! Wow,
fell in love with their music at the beginning of the summer, and he was like, and he saw one of their fire videos, and he was like, "I think I need to see that concert."
Listen, man, I spent a lot of time in Germany. I did 30 plus dates in Germany this summer.
I know,
and Rammstein. We talk about them in our show about every night.
Yeah.
They are the shit, man.
Oh, dude!
And what a show! And it, it wears you out watching it.
Oh yeah.
That's another one, man. That everything is just like go.
Yeah.
And so that's your son's first show. I'm impressed, man. That's very cool.
What they do is epic, and it's complete sensory overload for everybody who goes, and it's worth it.
And I advised him that he has now raised the bar so high that no matter what show he takes Luca to in the future, it's going to be a little bit disappointing.
Yeah. You can't top that. One of our guitar techs works for Rammstein, and he has to prepare physically to deal with that. And I'm telling you, you have to watch yourself in that production, else you can get killed.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I believe that.
Stuff going around.
There's 90 semis move it from day to day.
Yeah, man.
90 semis move their tour stuff from date to date.
Impressive shit, man. Yeah, that's a tour I'd love to be playing on, man. That'd be something.
They had two women playing piano doing covers of their songs in weird piano versions that were awesome. Like lounge piano.
That keyboard player on the treadmill just always blows my mind. Yeah,
Flake, he's insane. And it's because he has so much energy that he needs to keep his feet moving during the show. And then he wears those fire suits and he gets into that tub and then they burn fire while he's going like the mad organist.
You know, I heard about it before I even heard them. So I was already Rammstein. And all of a sudden, then when I saw it, I was like, wow, they converted me because it was so well done.
Oh, yeah.
And those guys are not fucking around. So it's like they live it. They live it. And to me, when you give that kind of commitment to a performance, you know, it's nothing better, you know. Hey, real quickly, there's some talk. I don't know. There's no dates yet. But, you know, I'm hoping that Kenny and I, Quentin, do some dates with our friend Billy Burnett. We played with Billy a little bit.
Oh,
yeah. We're hoping to do
let
that.
Us know.
And Billy gave Quentin a shout out and said, I'd like to go play. And so we're talking about that. So that'd be a cool thing to look forward to, too. Yeah. Billy's always fun. Things to do in the new year, kid.
Mm-hmm. Kenny, are you doing any session work, any recording work in the upcoming months with anybody, or are you not allowed to say until it kind of goes through?
No, no. I mean, I do stuff all the time, but it's just with, you know, friends, people that you don't really know. Actually, there is something I'm doing with an old friend of mine that I played with when I was a teenager, who was a lead singer in a band that we had when we were kids in Brooklyn. His name is Stephen Baker. He's working with this really interesting English producer named Justin Tracy. And what we're doing is we're doing like note for note renditions of great rock and roll stuff that we grew up in the 60s.
Wow.
So we did Junior Walker. We did the Junior
Walker. Entering Coob's wheelhouse. Hello.
Yeah, so we did Roadrunner with, you know, the Junior Walker thing where Arno Hecht plays the saxophone part on it.
Wow.
And I'm doing note for note James Jameson trend, you know, bass lines. We did Boney Maroney, like the Larry Williams version.
Oh, wow.
We did The Searchers, Don't Throw Your Love Away.
Ooh,
we did a version of The Stones, I'm Moving On. And I used my 65 Framis bass, and I nailed Bill Wyman's bass sound. We're doing this on purpose. So I'm getting to use all these instruments that I got here that I don't normally use very much because
they get to go out of the house too.
Yeah, well, certain instruments are just so specialized with the sound that when you have the chance to actually use the real thing that was on that record, you go, oh, great, I could finally pull this thing off the shelf and use it.
I have one of those,
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing, we're going to be doing the Byrds tune, She Don't Care About Time. We're going to be doing Paul Revere and the Raiders Just Like Me.
Wow.
And it's going to be called The Tip of the Hat. So I'm working on that. And then I've got a nephew, my brother's son, that's graduating from a recording production school in New York City. So I play on stuff for him because he's learning the process of producing and engineering.
What's the fun part of that for you? What's the most fun?
Well, I'm working with my nephew.
Yeah.
You know, and we're doing it remotely because I'm doing it through file sharing. You know, cool. He sends me the tracks. I do the bass stuff down here in my basement. Mm. And then we trade it back and forth, and he'll go, well, can you do this? Can you fix that? And he asked me if I could play some steel guitar on it, so I'm going to maybe play some steel or some dobro on it. We'll see. I haven't heard it yet. But, you know, so I just try to keep busy, and I'm working on, you know, just things that I do on the side for myself. And basically, I'm home with my dog all the time. I'm the house husband.
Yeah.
I'm the house husband.
He'll call me when he's walking his dog.
Yeah, you know.
I understand.
I like being home, you know.
Me too.
Unless it's something that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah,
I really prefer to be home these days. You know,
it's nice.
I'll go away somewhere, but I want to love what I'm doing because to me, to put up with 23 hours of traveling and bullshit for 1 hour of glory on stage. Sometimes I just don't have it in me to do it unless the passion is there for it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do those things that I can say I really love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I get it. After the tour that I did, I can't
do things just for the money anymore.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah. You gotta love it.
You know,
I discovered this year how much I loved it when I was away. As much as I miss being home, that's I guess why we tour in Europe, because it's just everything is set up right. You got a great promoter. You got, you know, the buses, the hotels, everything is good. And after 40 years, we finally figured out how to do it right. and get the right rest and do it. And I'm looking, I think we're going, I mean, there's, we don't have a committed thing yet, but it's looking like we've got something going on next year. So that's really cool, you know, that we could be able to still be able to do it.
Davey, they realized how much they missed you. That's double how much you guys missed them. I definitely got the feel from all the posts that I saw you guys made over there and the feedback from all the artists who've been over in Europe for makeup shows and in a lot of cases adding on because demand is there. People want to get out and be COVID safe while you're doing it as much as you can. And for the most part, we're succeeding with it.
Yeah.
It's good.
Oh, yeah.
It's good for everybody. And I'm really happy for both of you that you're getting out of the house, getting out of the basement once in a while, Katie, and go getting this Davey, getting with Dave and going out and playing. Yeah. This is all good things.
Yeah.
And, and then like on Sunday afternoons, I'll pop over to 118 North and sit in with Wally Smith.
Yeah. Oh, sure. You know. How is the professor?
He's great. I love Wally. He's great. And he's always open to trying stuff, you know. And when I play with him, he'll tell me, well, I'm going to use these guys this weekend and we're going to kind of go down this musical road. So if you want to learn a few of these, and I'll end up, you know, learning stuff that I normally may not normally go that way musically. And then I'll, you know, it's a challenge. And I'll try to, you know, learn, you know, like usually it's probably some kind of jazzy or fusion-y thing or something. That's cool. You know? So, whatever, man. Yeah. Just stuff I like to do.
But, you know, we got a nice little community of musicians that are doing our thing, and it's pretty cool.
It is.
Pretty cool.
Get out and see a show and get these guys out of the house more often, will you? I'd say I can't thank you guys enough for taking the time.
Man,
thank you.
And coming back on after so long. Kenny Aronson and David Wasikin and our dear friends. You guys were the second and third guests that we had. Dave, I think you got us hooked up with Kenny.
Yeah.
And that came off of having Jim as our first guest, Jim McCarty. So if you're talking to him, Kenny, make sure you give him our best.
I was actually going
to ask about him.
I was going to send him an email today, actually, and I will mention it.
Excellent. You guys do, and let me tell you, you guys do a terrific job. You're both. It's fun to hang with you. It's real easy.
Thanks.
It's like we're having a conversation with friends, and you even forget about like people watching it. We're just hanging out. It's
totally.
It's really cool, you know. And I can tell the passion. I mean, you know, you guys love music, and you love what goes around with the music. So it's a great hang for us.
Absolutely.
And we can curse.
Yes,
please, please.
It's really
curse.
Good for
fucking
me.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yes, please.
Sometimes
curse.
Marcus's mother will tell us that we curse too much.
My mom gets mad when I curse.
God bless my mom up in heaven. She's saying the same thing.
Thank you.
Do you have to use the F word so much?
Yes, I do.
You got to use an F word.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Fucking
A right, Mom.
Love you guys.
Hey,
thank
you
so much.
We'll see you all soon. Thank you very much for your time.
Have a great day. Love you, man. Marcus, it happened again. He turned on the mics with friends on the podcast. It just kind of goes and goes. And
those guys are always so much fun to talk to, and they always have great stories.
Jeez.
Stories you're not expecting. Those are the stories that I like to hear because those two have both been involved in music since the 70s and 80s and have been going strong this whole time. So they've seen things that have impacted the history of rock and roll. And
they've both seen things they can't even talk about. You know this.
Oh, yes, you know I know this. I totally know this. They've also been impactors in the history of rock and roll as well.
Yes.
So you have a little bit of both of that in these conversations, and it makes it really special.
Hey, anything we were talking about, you want to add your two cents, you can do that on social media. We post about every episode, so you can feel free to make comments there or email us.
imbalancedhistory@gmail.com.
The Imbalanced History is a product of Dark Duck Media, recorded in our studios and distributed by the Pantheon Podcast Network. Thanks to our sponsors, Boldfoot Socks and Crooked Eye Brewery. Till the next time that we get together and let friends just take over the podcast, I'm Ray Koob.
I'm Marcus Goldman.
And now you know why it's the Imbalanced History
of Rock and Roll.
Hey.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.